as I mentioned before everybody got here, the title screen tonight is Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through chapter 3, verses 20. We're not making it through that tonight. I prepared only for the end of the first chapter here because I think there's a lot in here to cover. There's a lot to discuss, and I think there's a lot that we need to look at. I don't even think that Dean, in his professional ability, is going to be able to get through chapter 2 and chapter 3 through verse 20 next week. So, like I said, this would be 2 to 3 weeks to get through this section the way it's divided up by the author that we are study guiding from, that is L.A. Mott. This was a huge section for him, and I don't know if he could have possibly have done this in a two-hour session, let alone as what it's going to probably take us three class periods. So we'll just be covering the end of chapter 1 tonight. But that's still under that general title of The World Under Condemnation. And the subtitle for the rest of this chapter is going to be The Relation of Divine Wrath Against All Humanity. And what we're going to see is that the focus of Romans is not just on the Jew, it's not just on the Gentile, but it's on all mankind. It's on everybody who was alive at that time, and it focuses on us today. And we're going to see some parallels between the times that they were living in then and the times that we live in now. 2,000 years later, and we haven't learned our lesson. So what we're going to see in verse 18 is the revelation of the wrath of God. I need to clear my screen here. And we're going to start reading with just verse 18. So, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of people who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. So, what we have to start this out is the word for, which refers us back to those previous verses we looked at last week. The reason God has revealed his righteousness in the gospel is because of another revelation. And that is that these men know the truth. God's wrath will be, observe that this is also in present tense, that it's God's wrath against men who suppress the truth. We're not talking about a future judgment, God's wrath against people in the final judgment. We're talking about God's wrath against people right now with actions they take leading to the consequence of those actions. God's wrath will be revealed in the final judgment, and we'll see that in the next chapter, chapter 2, verses 5 and 8. But the present tense here refers to the manifestation of the wrath of God in the present condition of our world, then and now. God's wrath against all unrighteousness is ever present, and we're going to see that in this letter. We're also going to compare that to what is happening in our society and around the world today. This present revelation of the wrath of God is explained by three different ideas. And that is that culminating in that God gave them up in verses 24, 26, and 28, which refers to judicial abandonment, as the writer has called it. That is, in God's righteous judgment, he has abandoned mankind because of their sin and their unwillingness to admit their sin, their unwillingness to repent for that sin, and in fact, their unwillingness to admit that God is who he says he is. We see that these men suppress or hold the truth in verse 18. In my New American Standard, these are people who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. That's from the Greek word katecho or katecho, katecho. There are two different meanings for that word, and the first is to hold fast or to possess. So these men that hold fast or possess the truth and unrighteousness. And that's that meaning of the word is used in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 30, which reads, "And those who weep as though they did not weep, and those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, and those who buy as though they did not possess." That idea to hold or to possess something. And then there's a second meaning of that, which is to hold down, to suppress, to restrain, or to hinder. And that idea is presented in an equivalent meaning in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 6 and 7, which reads, "And you know what restrains him now, so that he will be revealed in his time. For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains will do so until he is removed." That word restrain there is that same word, katecho or katecho in the Greek. And the idea we're getting at here is these men are either holding that truth in unrighteousness, or they're suppressing that truth in unrighteousness. And I don't know that it really matters which way you go with it, but the end result is their unrighteousness is causing the truth to be suppressed or to be held away from those who would know the truth. And these men that God's wrath is against are the ones causing this to happen. So the writer goes on to explain that he thinks it's the first meaning, and I don't really care about his explanation for that. I think that either one of those meanings are just fine. I think that either one gives you the idea that God's wrath is being held against these men because of what they are doing to the truth in unrighteousness. They are making it so it cannot be revealed. Or is not revealed readily. Dean?
Yeah, I think another way of looking at this that kind of brings it all together is God revealed himself to man, and they didn't like what they saw. So they divorced themselves from that truth. They beat it down so that they could follow their own desires. And God's wrath is revealed, and it's a reasonable wrath because they knew who God was. And later in the second, we'll talk about they did not like to retain God in their knowledge. They worshiped and served the creature more than the creator. So really what they're doing is worse than just not being informed. They are informed. They're just willingly disregarding everything that they should know about God.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And that's exactly the tone that the writer of the study manual we're in takes, is that these people have made God to basically be of no account. That they don't believe that God is the divine creator, and that they don't believe that the truth that he has revealed is the truth. And I've heard it more than once, even in my place of work, truth is what you make it. And that seems to be the approach of a lot of the worldly mindset today, that there is no real truth. That the truth can be whatever you want it to be. And I think that's what the focus is in this end of chapter one, is God saying that his wrath is revealed against those who are putting down the truth that he has revealed. And he's going to show the error of their ways. Bob?
Is this wrath revealed in any physical way, or is it just in what we read in the scriptures about God's wrath?
I think that he's going to be very clear about that in the verses to come. And we'll discuss that as we go through. There is, of course, like I mentioned, the final judgment. But God does not render his wrath only in the final judgment. His wrath is revealed to us in the current world. And when you are living a sinful life and suppressing the truth, God is going to let you know it. And he's going to tell us how he's going to let you know it in just a minute. We'll get into that. And I think you will get a decent answer for your question here in just a few minutes. So we're dividing up these last few verses of chapter 1 into three different ideas. So verses 19 and 20 show that these men had possession of the truth. In verse 19, because that which is known about God is evident within them. For God made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, that is, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived, being understood by what has been made, so that they are without excuse. So these men, humankind, knew about God, could not deny that God exists, because they saw the power of God, especially in this time, as they saw the apostles superseding nature in the miracles they were performing to prove that they were from God. And God goes on to say that, or Paul goes on to say through the Holy Spirit, that God revealed himself to all mankind through his eternal power and his divine nature that are clearly perceived by what has been made. Those things around us cannot be explained away. We cannot look at the world that we live in and think that or agree with the idea that this is an accident, that this is just something that happened, that if you give something enough time, something will come from nothing. And I remember in my studies in high school learning that life does not come from lifelessness. And that was in a biology book. That's a direct quote. However, today, you would see that statement completely blacked out of any biology book, because that's exactly what they preach, is that life came from lifelessness, that everything that is around us is an accident, that if you give something enough time, that it can happen. And more than once, I've had it explained to me that if I were to take this device that's on my wrist, take every single part in here and break it, smash it, throw it up in the air and have it come down completely working, there's more of a chance of that happening than a human being accidentally being created. Which should tell you that no matter how much time you give it, there is no way that life is an accident. There is no way that we can look at what God has made and say that was by chance. But that is something that just happened. Yet that's what these men were doing. They possessed the truth. God made it known to them. It is evident within them. We can look at just our race, how we procreate, the fact that we can do so, the fact that our bodies are ruled by the natural world we live in and under natural law, the things that our bodies can do to heal themselves, that we can look into the microscopic world and see how much information God has put into our bodies to create us. And we can see the evidence of God right there. But these men, even knowing that, denied God. God revealed the truth to them in his creation all around them. He made it evident to all mankind that his creation was not an accident. That creation was purposeful and it was intentional. He revealed enough of himself, not all of himself, but enough of himself in his creation to leave humanity without an excuse of ignorance about who God was, who God is. Dean.
Well, I think the point is well made that when you look at the complexity of just one single cell, the mathematical improbability that could exist, that it could have evolved and become what it is, it has been referred to as Darwin's mathematical problem. It's just not possible, but the numbers are so big that most people's eyes glaze over when you start talking about numbers like that.
Right.
And those people that want to deny God prey on the ignorance of people about those numbers.
Right.
And that's not fair. But that's what they do. And just to know that God exists that's not going to save you. But it will cause you to want to know more about this being. And of course, you're going to find that in the Bible.
And like I said, you can go even smaller. You can look at the atom. Yeah. We still have a hard time explaining how electrons maintain their orbit in a cloud around the nucleus. How does that happen? In the laws of physics, it seems that those electrons should fly away, that they're moving at such a speed and in such a motion that should not be possible. But that's, again, a mathematical problem that has a big enough number that it can possibly be solved. But that number is so impossible to reach that the chances of that happening are infinitesimal. But again, God revealed himself to man through his creation. We have no excuse.
Most people don't know what log E is on their calculator. Most people, if you look on your calculator, you have a button called log E. That's the function that describes the relationship that we've observed in almost everything we look at.
Yep, it's the natural logarithm.
Yeah.
It's a number that is built into nature. And we take it for granted that we have discovered that and we use it, but we take it for granted that it actually exists. So we look at the natural order of the universe. We look at the fact that God made man in his image. God breathed life into all living creatures. He's told us this. And we look at the macroscopic world around us and the microscopic universe, and they both reveal this divine order, from the subatomic particles to cellular mechanics that Dean has mentioned, to procreation that we still cannot explain. We understand how it works, but we cannot explain how life happens. We cannot create it ourselves, except through the means through which God has given us. We cannot take these chemical base elements and make life from it. It does not work. And through exploration of our known universe, we see these mechanics and this divine nature in place. All of these things reveal God, all of them. And yet, I read daily about things that men who think they're so smart cannot define, cannot come up with an answer for how certain things in our galaxy that they can witness, they do not understand how they can possibly be there. It breaks the rules that they have made. And that's because God made it that way. And they are unwilling to accept that. In verse 21 through 23, for even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their reasonings and their senseless hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools, and they exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible mankind, of birds, four-footed animals, and crawling creatures. So we see that men, knowing the truth, seeing that it was in front of them, rejected that truth. And so, knowing God, they rejected him. Still happens. They are rejecting him. They did not recognize God's deity. They didn't even recognize it when he was here as a man. Even though they were told he would be here. They were told he was coming. And those prophecies were hundreds of years old and pointed to Jesus. And Jesus gave them all of the evidence that they needed to understand that he was the Son of God. And they still rejected him. They did not give thanks for his good gifts. And God has blessed each and every one of us. They became futile in their reasonings. That word being, I'm not going to try and pronounce it, Mateu, maybe, restlessness, fruitless, useless, of no purpose, futile, had no purpose. Their reasonings came to nothing. And it did not bring about the proper goal. So claiming to be wise, they showed their foolishness. And that foolishness led to idolatry. That idolatry being man making things out of what is around them and then bowing down and worshiping out of what they created. So instead of worshiping the Creator, they worshiped what they created. And they exchanged the glory of God, who had presented himself to them, for idols. And the things that were mentioned there, corruptible mankind, birds, four-footed animals, crawling creatures, you name it. There's probably an idol for every animal that's ever out there. People have bowed down to statues, to stone, to trees, to rocks. Worship the stars, worship the sun and the moon, anything to not worship God and to not give God the glory that he deserves. And again, this foolishness led to this idolatry, this inability to recognize God for who he is and what he had done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we talking about Jews here? Are we talking about Gentiles here? Are we talking about all mankind as a group?
We're talking about humanity. We're talking about all mankind. We don't have to, in this first chapter, all mankind is being named as rejecting God. Because all men have rejected God. All men have committed sin. And we see Jews did it. Gentiles did it. The Greeks did it. The barbarians did it. It doesn't matter who they were. They are all guilty of the same thing. Rejecting God. And Paul here through the Holy Spirit is telling us that all humanity is guilty of this. There isn't anybody who's not guilty. He's going to be a little more specific about who he's talking about in the second and third chapters. He will talk about the Jews in part of that, and he will talk about the Gentiles in part of that. But this first accusatory statement here is for all mankind, because all men rejected God and did not give him the glory that he deserved.
And that's why judgment comes on all men.
Yeah. So my question, the question I had open for this was, is it any different today than it was when Paul wrote this letter? Does our society partake in this foolishness? And I don't think you have to look very far to find an answer.
Well, they worship science and other stars and hobbies and money.
Yeah, look at all of the fantastic theories that are invented to explain God away. That the universe is billions of years old, and that's the only way that life can exist.
And I think one of the most pervasive thoughts in our culture now is that we can find our own truth. And you said that you have heard about it at work all the time.
Yep.
I was too. It's just, you know, that I get to decide what is my truth. And that is so pervasive in our culture, and that has driven us so far away from God that the wrath of God is being revealed. It's like in the next verse, 24, I think that's where the wrath of God is being revealed.
Absolutely.
He's going to turn you over to that sinful mind, and you're not going to be able to stay. He's going to abandon you, basically,
yep.
Because you've abandoned him.
And that's where we are at the third point, is the consequence of these actions, the consequence of this mindset, which is abandonment to sin, which is God abandoning man to his sin.
I can't think of anything sadder.
No.
I can't think of anything more sad than the word. It is tragic that we will get to that point where God will say, enough.
It's depressing.
It is.
And these next nine verses are hard to read because they are very pointed. And people don't like to read these verses because they are so specific about what God hates and the things that make God absolutely leave you, abandon you, and give up on you. So verse 24, I'll read verse 24 through 31. Therefore, God gave them up to vile impurity in the lusts of their hearts, so that their bodies would be dishonored among them. For they exchanged the truth of God for falsehood and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them over to degrading passions, for their women exchanged natural relations for that which was contrary to nature. And likewise, the men too abandoned natural relations with the woman and burned in their desire toward one another, males with males committing shameful acts and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error. And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a depraved mind to do those things that are not proper. People, having been filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, and evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unfeeling, unmerciful. I can't think of a place in the New Testament that makes me more depressed than to think about people who echo these sentiments, who live lives like this.
And have chosen that.
And have chosen to do it.
It's tragic.
So we start verse 24 with therefore. And if you don't know what a therefore means, it is an if-then statement. If, as God has stated in the first 23 verses, then 24 through 31. This is what you get when God abandons you. When God leaves you, this is what you have. The absence of everything that is godly.
You can also say it's what you get when you leave God.
Yeah, well, God's not going to leave you first.
That is right.
God's not going to leave you first. God will leave you when you leave him. And by verse 24, the things that you have done have led you to leave God. You have put him out of your mind. You have made him of no avail, of no account in your life. Therefore, God has no choice but to abandon you. Because of humanity's rejection of God, God gave them up and delivered them over to their sins. So verses 25 through 27, he describes sin punished with sin. Sin runs its course and reaches its natural end, which is death. That is the separation from God. That is God no longer having any part in your life when you're living a sinful life like this. In the very practice of homosexuality, people were receiving in themselves the due penalty of their errors. The error was abandonment of God, exchanging the truth of God for a lie, saying that this is how it's supposed to be. This is how I am. This is my truth. This is not the way God made it. It's not God's intention for his creation. And because you have decided that you're better than God, God has let you have what you have chosen. The perversion of homosexuality is a punishment, the due penalty for the rejection of God. You have chosen to not have God in your life. Therefore, the sin that rules your life is now the ruler of your life. These people have made that choice. And they began dishonoring God. They ended by dishonoring themselves. And verse 28, just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God, that idea is a play on words. It's the Greek word that describes did not see fit to acknowledge, dikimazo. This means they tested and tried God and found him unfit or unworthy to be retained in their knowledge. I can't imagine making that decision. But that's what they have done. By choosing these things and that lifestyle, that's exactly what they did. I know better than God. This was a misuse of their mind, and God punished them accordingly. God gave them up to a depraved mind with all the consequences listed in verses 29 through 31. This is what happens when you choose sin. Sin begets sin. And you have to deal with all the consequence of sin. And that's what you're looking at in verses 29 through 31. Unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice, gossiping, slanders, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, no understanding, untrustworthy, unfeeling, and unmerciful. And that describes a lot of our society today. You can look around you and see that. I was talking to one of my technicians today. They're afraid to even wear their uniforms out of the pharmacy anymore into another store. One of my technicians told me that he went into a Safeway wearing his smock or his scrubs, his Walgreens scrubs, and got cussed at by somebody who didn't even know him just because he was wearing his scrubs, who just hated our store. But that's the kind of world we live in. People don't have to know you to hate you and to put all of these sinful ideas into motion. When you give your life to sin, sin takes over. And again, sin begets sin. And this is the consequence of such misuse of the mind. When you think you know better than God, God's going to step back and let you make the choice. We see that God more than once when the Jews made this choice in the Old Testament. We see in the prophets that we saw that God laughed at them. Which means God thought they were absolutely idiots. They were making the wrong choice. He had shown himself to them time and time again in the miraculous things that he did for his nation, giving them everything that they had, showing them that they could absolutely be undefeated if they would just honor God. And they gave it up. And they chose these things. And God abandoned them. God gave them up to their sin. Finally, in verse 32, and although they know the ordinance of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. Charles.
And I want to throw something out here. It's a science program. Have you heard of the Webb telescope? It's a new telescope that's been launched into space. It seems further out than any other telescope we've had. What I find amazing is mankind is doing this, trying to understand God. That's impossible. They're not going to understand what they're doing. It says that they thought they saw all the galaxies. They found out that it was just the beginning.
Right.
One thing they did say, I'm good. I can't make a guess, but our universe is still expanding. And what's going to be done with that?
Who knows? And I don't think we can make a judgment about whether or not that's happening or not. God created and put into natural order the things that are happening right now. Whether or not the universe is still expanding, that doesn't really matter. We'll never see the end of it. And by the time the end of it comes, God will take care of that. I don't know that mankind will ever live to see the edges of the universe, because I don't know that there is such a thing. There is a God did make what he made. I have no idea what that is, though. All I know is what I can see around me. And man has looked further and further out to try and answer those mysteries, to try and solve those ideas. But all they've done is find more questions than answers.
Yeah, they brought it out. They tried to find some answers upon the day.
I've read some of the things that the James Webb telescope has seen, and they've seen some, at least two different things that I have read that they say defy the law of physics. Okay. Then I guess our law is wrong because God made it that way. And they also don't have an explanation for how we're seeing the starlight from galaxies that are so far away. Hasn't been enough time for that light to reach us. Yeah, we're seeing it. But you know what? God didn't make Adam a baby. God made Adam a man. When God created the universe and the light that shines from those stars, that doesn't mean that when he created that star 3 million billion light years away, that he didn't create the light that was coming from it. God set into order this natural universe, and he did it however he wanted. You cannot think that everything started from an egg and grew from that. But that's exactly what they think, that there had to be a beginning. But then what was before that? And what caused it? And there's no explanation. Because we can't know that. We are not the creator. God created it as he found fit, and he called it good. And that's what it is. He created the natural universe around us for us. And we are to utilize it as appropriate, but we also are to give God the honor for what he did. That is creating this for us and revealing himself to us so that we know how to worship our God and give him appreciation for what he did. This idea that they also approve of those who practice them. This is the culmination of the description of this unrighteousness. In today's world, moral philosophers calmly and dispassionately figure out a rationale to justify a sinful life instead of falling into the sin in the heat of passion like they did in this letter where they worshiped idols, physical idols. These moral philosophers in today's age worship a mental idol where they make man God, where they make their truth the truth. And it doesn't matter how you go around God or how you deny God. That's what we do. Lenny.
Well, in today's society, the wisdom of man is trying to supersede God's wisdom. They don't recognize God as a God.
No. Why would they? They've already denied him. They've denied that he exists. So you can't recognize him as an all-powerful creator when you don't even think that he's around.
Culture, we've gotten to the point where we not only are expected to approve of sinful conduct, but we're expected to celebrate. And we certainly can't condemn it. In fact, we're expected to condone it.
Right.
If we don't, then we're a hater. There's something wrong with us. We're bigoted. In all kinds of ways that have been placed on us. And we're expected to actually celebrate sin. We've seen that in our culture.
Right.
All over the place. That's exactly what verse 32 is.
Right.
That sin's not that far.
And that is the sign of things to come. But there's hope. And I don't want you to get down about this. So let's reflect on what we've read. This judicial abandonment is not the final judgment. This is not God's final punishment and does not imply that such people cannot be saved. Remember, this is part of Paul's demonstration of humanity's need for salvation. He's showing us why we need it. Not a demonstration that humanity can't be saved. So the story of the prodigal son, how far did he have to fall before he saw what he was doing was not good?
I don't know, but he could never fall from his father's love.
There you go.
And we can never, ever fall.
Exactly right. He was in a pig pen eating pig slop when he finally came to his senses. And all over the Roman world, Paul found people who were sick of sin, having found what it all comes to, and were looking for something better. He shares that with us in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 11, where he says, "Such were some of you, but you were washed, you were sanctified, you were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, and in the Spirit of our God." So this passage provides a basis for understanding of the modern world that we live in, verse 32, as Kim has said. The present world gives evidence of a return to paganism. This is the times we live in. It shows itself in the light of Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 32, to be a world under the wrath of God. That's the world we live in. God has abandoned the world to sin. It doesn't mean that the world is unsavable, but it does mean that God has abandoned them to their own devices. So this righteous abandonment, again, is not the final judgment and does not imply that these people can't be saved. And what we need to understand when we read this is, yes, we can identify with this. We see this as the world around us. We see this as coming to pass yet again as it has time and time again in the past, we saw that these kind of passions and ideals that absolutely forsook God caused the end of the Roman Empire, caused the end of multiple different empires throughout time. And we can be sure that if our lights aren't shining bright enough and we cannot pull our country out of this, that it'll lead to the end of our country as well. I hate to say that, but we have seen history repeated time and time again that when man falls far enough from God, God abandons man completely, and it leads to nothing good. But there's hope. What we're seeing here is a description of things that we've seen before and that we're seeing again. And what we're seeing here is that there is hope, that God still loves mankind, and there is hope for salvation. But it is conditional, and it requires God. We cannot continue to deny God and hope that God's going to look over us. And that's what we're going to see in chapter 2. As we go into the next chapter, we're going to see that some of these people were thinking, well, you know, I don't think this applies to me because I'm a Jew and, you know, I'm of the chosen people, or I'm Greek and we're the strongest empire in the world, or Roman. Strongest empire in the world, God can't possibly want to get rid of us. And what we're going to see is that people who look at these ideas and say, that guy's a sinner, I can tell by the way he lives his life. These are people who need to be looking in the mirror, because we are all exactly the same. We are all sinners. We are all people who need Christ in our life, who need to understand that God is real and that God does expect something from us, that God does expect us to live at a standard that he has set, that truth is not variable. There is only one truth. And so if you get a chance, I would at least recommend you read chapter 2, verses 1 through 20 for next week. And Dean may be able to get a little further than that. 17 through 29, it wouldn't hurt for you to read the whole chapter just to be prepared. But again, no pressure. You make it as far as you can, because I knew just by what I was looking at that these 14 verses were going to be more than enough to cover tonight. Are there any other questions or ideas? Dean.
When he says that God gave them up, the alternative would be for God to not let them do that. But God is not like that. God gives us the ability to choose. And when we choose, we make our bed and we have to lie in. And I'll tell you what's scary to me is some of the things that I see as he begins this listing are things that are just universally abhorred. Murder. Universal at war. But then he also lumps into that same group things like gossip and disobedient parents. You know, we don't always like thinking that that's as bad as murder, but it really is.
Yeah, I think anybody who can look at that list of things in 29, 30, and 31 and say, oh, that's part of my life, needs to be thinking, maybe it shouldn't be. If I'm a person who likes to gossip, maybe that's something I should really work on. Or if I'm a person who is untrustworthy, I would take that to mean is somebody who doesn't mind telling the little white lie every now and again to keep themselves out of trouble. Well, maybe that's something you need to look at. Maybe lying is not something you want to get yourself involved in. And it says unfeeling and unmerciful. Again, mercy, love towards our fellow man is very important, and we need to be willing to show that. And if we are unmerciful, if we are unwilling to show love to our fellow man, especially those who need it, then maybe we need to take a closer look inward rather than outward. And again, that's what he's going to talk about in the next chapter, is us judging others. And he's going to accuse people of being a judge when you're doing the exact same thing. When you are willing to look at somebody and judge them without knowing them, without knowing anything about them, then you really have a problem with yourself. And he's going to put them in their place as well. Bob, did we answer your question? Did we get close enough?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because, I mean, I think just in our society today, we understand that there are consequences to homosexuality as well. I mean, who has not seen a commercial for some pharmaceutical drug for PrEP, pre-exposure to AIDS? That's, they're all over the place. I mean, those things that people who want to live these risque lifestyles have to do.
And personally, I'm not so sure that the things that they have to endure because of their lifestyle isn't part of the wrath of God in this present age.
Absolutely. We saw recently a spread of monkeypox in the past 6 to 8 months that was 98% contained in the homosexual community. And again, the rise of AIDS was almost entirely in the homosexual community. It was, there was in the 70s and 80s, there was some of that that people acquired because of blood transfusions, those kind of things, but mostly it was in the homosexual community. And don't think that God doesn't have the ability to punish us for sin in this world, because he absolutely does. And if God abandons us, then he turns over his natural world that he has created to rule us. And that should put the fear of God into everybody, because you do not want to be ruled by this world. It is absolutely unmerciful and unforgiving. Any other ideas before we close out? We got about a minute.